Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
Howdy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
Nice. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the VeloCast. There have been countless times across the years that heartbreak has been the central theme of a bike race. And joining the mass ranks of the gut wrench was Magnus Cort Nielsen on today's Stage 11 of the Vuelta a España. Having been part of the five-strong break who escaped the peloton with 30 kilometres gone, Cort Nielsen was the last man standing in the final punishing 900 metres of the race. But the 25 and up percent gradient proved too much for the EF Nippo rider, and he was eventually overcome by the group of GC favourites, led by Enric Mas and, coming back from his tarmac-kissing folly of yesterday, Primož Roglič, who took both the stage and the bonus seconds on the line.
Do you know, that was a really enjoyable stage to watch. It was short, it was snappy, the terrain was consistently interesting all day, even before we got to that surprisingly difficult looking second cat climb before the, you know, the finale up that wall. I've got to say, it's not going to be a long show tonight though, because it wasn't a complicated day. It was clear very early on that the break that got away, which included, you know, Magnus Cort, who you mentioned, Jonathan Lastra, Edward Plankert, but not that Edward Plankert for long-term listeners of This Week in Cycling History, Johan Bu and Harm van Hook. It went out, but it never went far. You know, two and a half minutes, that kind of thing. It was obvious that we were in for a bunch finish, if you like, up that difficult final wall. And the teams that were really invested in it were Jumbo-Visma, for the sake of Primož Roglič, who, by the way, I didn't recognise without him being in a leader's jersey.
No, I've been struggling throughout the afternoon going, oh, where's Primož gone? Oh, yeah, of course, yes, yeah, sorry, he's in his Jumbo kit. Of course he's there.
I mean, genuinely, I think he must have spent fewer days in a team jersey than he has in a leader's jersey for the last umpteen years. You know, it's just astonishing. But then we also saw Bike Exchange get involved for Michael Matthews, who we had down as one of the favourites, although he didn't really feature in the finale. And, you know, everything just kept falling. Harm van Hook had a wee mistake on a descent, which saw him fall out of the break. But when it was obvious it was going to get caught, when they were down to just under a minute, I think, Magnus Cort took off on his own on that second cat climb and did a hugely impressive climb. It was 46 seconds it went down to, and I expected it to tumble because we had the big teams working really hard behind them to try and pull them back. And it stayed at 45, 46 for kilometre after kilometre. It was a magnificent ride from the Education First man.
Yeah, it really, really was. And even though we all knew in our heart of hearts it was doomed, and in fairness to him, he lasted a whole lot longer than I thought he was going to, given the time gaps and indeed the terrain that was involved. You were still wishing for him to make it. Even as, you know, he started that climb and was getting up the climb, and you could see the GC group just behind him. There was even a point where Enric Mas and Primož Roglič kind of eased up, and Mas,
I thought he might win again at that point.
Yes, exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. Enric Mas seemed to be desperately interested in Primož Roglič's right cheek for some reason. He just kept staring at him for no readily explicable reason. And it was at that point, I thought perhaps Cort Nielsen's going to just hold on for this, and they're going to mark each other out. But no, it wasn't to be. Before we get to that point, though, here's my only criticism of the day, because I agree with you, John. It was a great watch. Another one where I feel that getting to watch it from the start would have been more beneficial.
Yeah.
Given it was such a short stage, there was never the feeling that, you know, we're going to be sitting about here waiting for something to happen at a predestined point in the stage. But my only criticism of the day is on the upper section of that second climb, which I agree with you was a wee bit more difficult looking on the road than it was in the road book. We talked extensively yesterday about any potential weakness that may be in either Roglic's body or indeed in his head. And why on earth didn't any of the GC guys give it a go over the top of that and say, right, Primoz, come on, you need to chase here. Let's see how, if you've got your, you know, your big boy brave pants on to go downhill fast after binning it the day before. And nobody did.
No, I completely agree. And that was a difficult descent. It was an ideal opportunity. And it was the kind of fast, sweeping descent that we saw Roglic cock up on yesterday. So it would have been an opportunity. The only one who really had a dig, other than the pace being set by Bike Exchange and Jumbo, was David de la Cruz, who got off the front and tried to get across, but didn't quite manage.
David de la Cruz is what, 6-7 minutes down?
Nobody gives a toss about David de la Cruz.
No offence, David. I'm really sorry, but that is the case at the minute. And even when de la Cruz was caught, I was hoping that might bring out one of the Movistar guys, Enric Mas being the obvious candidate. But even Adam Yates or someone like that, just, you know, if I said this yesterday, if the outcome of the day was to answer the question, at least the question had been posed, but nobody did it.
No. And they were taken up to the foot of a climb, which we've seen a few times before in the Vuelta. I think this is the fourth time up it. So it's known to the teams, even if the riders didn't recce it. Because one thing that's become clear in this Vuelta is there's not much reccing going on. The number of interviews I've heard where people have said, so, you know, what do you know about the last climb tomorrow? And Roglic or sundry other people have just gone, oh, I've got no idea, I've never looked at it. But this is...
Well, yeah, I mean, if nothing else, we as spectators have managed to learn the word nothing in various languages as riders are interviewed across the days.
But, you know, they got to that final climb, and everybody, every punter, every member of the public that I've talked to on social media, I've got a couple of emails about, you know, today, has said that this final climb really suited the characteristics of Roglic. Mm. And we'd seen that Jumbo were serious. I mean, there was an incident earlier in the day where Burgos were working because they'd missed the break. And Jumbo clearly just went up and said, look, there's no point. We're going to bring it back anyway. You're wasting your time. And that was when it was being held at about... It was about 1:30 then. It drifted slightly further out. And we'd seen how serious Jumbo were because at the foot of that final climb, which was epic, it was like the climb into Siena at the end of Strada Bianchi at one point. Sepp Kuss went to the front. I tell you, I would not want to play Sepp Kuss at poker or something. He always just looks bored. You know, he comes to the front producing God knows how many hundreds of watts, looking like he's, you know, I can't be bothered with this.
I mean, the amount of strain that Sepp Kuss shows in his face is akin to, you know, any of us essentially lifting our heads to look at something that's happened on the TV. You're like, oh, okay, and back down we go again.
I mean, he makes Nairo Quintana look like an expressive Shakespearean actor. But he got to the front, and then we had, I wonder who that other Jumbo domestic is, and it turned out to be Primoz Roglic because I didn't recognise him with a leader's jersey on. And he nailed it. But then we saw Enric Mas wanting to have a dig. Now, this is by far the best Enric Mas we've ever seen. You know, Andy Elch, who lives in Spain, was saying to me that he thinks Mas has lost a fair bit of weight, and he is looking leaner and hungrier. But also, he's not the guy who we used to see just sit back and wait for things to happen, which was really his trademark for a while. You know, he was always a good rider, but he never looked like he instigated. He was champing at the bit today, to the point where Primoz actually nearly put him into the barriers because he was trying to pass Primoz Roglic at a narrowing of the road where the barriers kind of jinked in, and it couldn't do it. And then it was just flat out, and he very nearly held Primoz Roglic. I mean, I thought for a moment he was going to drop him. He was that strong. And then they did that easing off that you talked about and had a wee look at each other. And Enric Mas was looking lovingly over at Primoz Roglic. And that's that point where you and I both thought, oh, actually, Magnus Cort might still have this if they sit and watch each other. Because he wasn't weakening. He was still driving. But then it all kicked off again. And I think what we saw was a Primož Roglič who wanted to make a point after yesterday. He's had virtually universal condemnation about his recklessness in that descent yesterday. A few folk have said, oh, it's good to see him race. Yeah, as I said yesterday, I get that for one-day races, but in a Grand Tour, you have to look at the big picture. But he managed to put time into everybody, but not much into Mass. I mean, not much at all. The movie star guy is... Lopez needs to move to being his domestique, doesn't he? Because he's the one big challenger left that Primož Roglič looks like he's worried about, even though they had a massive love-in after the finish. I thought they should get a bloody room.
The one thing I'm left a wee bit confused by, and it could, of course, be easily explained with, actually, my legs are on fire and so are my lungs, I simply can't do anything more, was we all know that Primož Roglič always has that finishing sprint.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the only way that you can possibly counter that is by trying to drop Roglič before we get to that point. So my question is, why did Mas spend valuable time gazing lovingly at the right side of Roglic's face when I think he should have, if at all possible, tried to break him because there was still the distance left where he could have neutralised the harsh effects of that finishing sprint that Roglic has by having maybe a slight gap over him before we got to that point.
Yeah, I think he just didn't... I think he was absolutely puggled. It's as simple as that. Yeah. I mean, I think he'd had a big dig in the really steep bit of the climb, which... kudos to Nico Roach, actually, because when he was faced with the thought that, you know, as a lot of the literature suggested, there were 30% sections, he went, no, they're not 30%, they're only 22.
Well, in fairness, if you were faced with the 30% and it turns out it was only going to be 22, you would be emphasising the thank God it's only part of that 22%.
Do you know, when I used to do a wee bit of kind of solo climbing, I stopped being scared once I was past 40 feet because, you know, whether it's 40 feet or 200, don't matter, you're going to squelch when you hit the ground. And I kind of think about that with 22 and 30%. It doesn't matter, I'd be off and walking anyway.
Yeah, it's going to hurt now. Regardless of anything north of 20 is just, we can leave it as evil.
It's just daft. I think he'd given everything he could. But he managed to respond to Roglic, and although Roglic got a gap, it wasn't a huge gap. I mean, I firmly expected him to take 10 or 15 seconds after I saw him at the foot of the climb looking so aggressive once I'd recognised who it was. But it was just a tiny, tiny gap. What is it, 3 seconds or something, plus the bonus that he took at the end? So Mas, take a step up, man. I mean, this is the best we've seen him, and I think he's only going to get better. I think over the next couple of years, Movie Star might have a real chance of taking something in a Grand Tour, particularly if Pogačar and Roglič don't turn up, because I was really impressed with Mas today. Ineos, same again today. I mean, they were left wanting. Tyler Pinot, one of our subscribers, said to me, asked the question pretty early on in the day, so how much is Roglic going to win the stage by, once it was obvious that the break wasn't going away? And Tyler said, oh, maybe 10 or 20, and automatically tack on another 10 or 20 on top of that for the Ineos boys. They couldn't follow road signs at this point, never mind Roglic.
Well, you say that, but I think praise where praise is due for Team Ineos. The Movistarization of the squad is now complete, because as of yesterday, Ineos moved into the lead in the team competition.
What a joy. What a joy.
So that's it. We now have a new movie star, and, you know, the king is dead. Long live the king.
Do you know what? I mean, one thing that does depress me about all of that is I'm coming round to your theory that for Egan Bernal, the fragility is just going to be an ongoing issue. I think we're going to see one magnificent race from him a year for the rest of his career, and then just not being able to cope with that. You know, if he comes in reasonably fresh, like we saw him at the Giro, then he has one race a year where he can show us the talent that we, you know, we've come to expect from him. I don't think he can do two Grand Tours or even two big races in a year.
No, but even in that, and I know I'm probably going to get flack for this, you know, the Egan Bernal that won the Giro did so finishing ahead of a, you know,
a solid career long
domestique in his mid 30s who, you know, up until recently hasn't won anything. And so the competition wasn't great for Bernal. I mean, I think the results are flattering what is there from the rider. And I wish it was the case that he was this astonishingly talented guy who was likely to win 10 tours in a row, because it would add to the excitement we've got of this glut I really should say duo of really new exciting riders in the shape of Roglic and Podgorica, who are head and shoulders, it seems, above everyone at the minute. Because having a group of three, and indeed more if at all possible, fighting it out for each Grand Tour would be fantastic for us. So I would have loved to have been proven wrong, but just I'm just not seeing it from Bernal.
I agree. It's looking more and more like you were right. And Yates, he's good. He's really good. And he's been pushing hard. He's been probably the most impressive of the Ineos guys. But, you know, there are those flaws that I'm not going to batter, you know, flog a dead horse. I'm not going to batter on about what we said. People have already heard that. But for me now, Mass is in with a chance of something. If Roglic makes the slightest mistake, I think Mass looks good enough to fully capitalise on it. And today didn't really suit him. He's more suited to the, you know, remember he did really well in the Angliru.
Yeah,
he's more suited to those really big epic climbs. So I'm looking forward to this race developing. Where
it has to be said, Roglic was looking fragile in places. So you know, I know the Angliru isn't in this year's race, but I think there is space in some of the climbs that we've got in the third week where, at least, going back to that point, the question can be asked of Primož Roglič.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're exactly right. There's opportunities for Mass in the third week. And Unzu needs to sit down and talk to those guys and say to Lopez, look, I know that you're, you know, a GC hired guy, but Ulrich is just going better than you. We have to fall in line as a team behind him. Lopez is still up there, but to me, Mass looks the real threat from Movistar. We also have to talk about Odd in the red jersey. What a ride from him today. Looked like he was going to get dropped on that second cat climb. Finishes 10th on the stage. I mean, just epic. Wonderful, wonderful ride from him. And Intermarché, it's another night on the champagne in the bus.
That's possibly why he nearly got dropped on that second cat climb. One final thing before I go to the results. We've talked about Magnus Cort and a fantastic ride it was. I also thought it was really generous of him to go and say hello to every single spectator, regardless of which side of the road they were on, and the final 200 metres of that race.
That was me riding up the Swear.
It was all of us, wasn't it?
It was like, oh, this is a bit steep. I'm going to go sideways and see if it gets a bit better.
Results for the 11th stage, and Primož Roglič takes the win 3 seconds ahead of Enric Mas. Teammate Miguel Angel Lopez was in third at 5 seconds. Jack Haig came in fourth at 7 seconds, along with fifth place Adam Yates, sixth place Romain Bardet, seventh Felix Groschardner, and eighth place Alexander Vlasov. Egan Bernal came in at 10th at 11 seconds, along with the Mayo Rojo Odd Christian Eiking. So the GC after stage 11, Odd Christian Eiking remains in red, only 58 seconds now ahead of Guillaume Martin in second. Primož Roglič sits in third at 1:56, Enric Mas in fourth at 2:31. Miguel Angel Lopez is in fifth at 3:28, Jack Haig is in sixth at 3:55. Egan Bernal is in seventh at 4:46, Adam Yates in eighth at 4:57, Sepp Kuss is in ninth at 5:03, and Felix Groschardner rounds out the top 10 at 5:38. Tomorrow's stage 12 of this year's Vuelta is 175 kilometres long, runs from Jaén to Cordoba, and unless there's some completely unexpected madcap adventure from someone looking to utterly destroy the script, definitely will not feature any GC action. Instead, the parkour suggests those of a more Roulaire-esque classics demeanour will be the type to contest the stage.
Is the final climb called the Alto del 14%?
I don't think so.
No, I think it is.
Okay.
Looks like a breakaway, doesn't it? I mean, it really does. And Magnus Cort would have been very high on my list, but for his exertions today. It's a difficult day, but it's not going to be a GC day. You know, that ramp at the finale today is what made it a GC day. You know, the guys knew they could make a difference there, so they worked hard. I don't think there's the same motivation. I'm going to be really lazy, and I'm going to mention two people. One is Matteo Trentin, who I thought looked quite frisky today. And the other is, it's the kind of stage that might suit Michael Storer.
Well, that would be fantastic.
Three stages for DSM, that would be amazing.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I mean, it may be that Michael Matthews realised early enough he wasn't on such a good day and maybe was thinking of tomorrow, or indeed it's a sign that he's going through a little bit of a bad patch and may not feature in tomorrow's race, in which case, you know, guys like Trentin and Tratnik may be the kind of people that would be looking to take the stage. But Michael Storer is a great show. I think that's a really good call there.
And his tail's up.
Absolutely. Just when we were talking about Magnus Cort, you see yet another EF Nippo rider, Simon Carr, had to abandon today. Is there only only Magnus Cort left in that team at the minute? It seems the riders from them pulling out left, right, and centre.
Yeah, I mean, well, they don't have the budget for a proper physio, presumably, because Jonathan Walters keeps going on about how poor they are. Maybe they just can't treat people with bad knees and that kind of thing.
It could possibly.
I've got a real downer on Jonathan Walters this year. It's no fair, because he does do amazing things with the budget that he's got.
If he would just stop complaining about it, that would be nice.
He's got an MBA as well. I mean, what a guy.
Has he? Again, I mean, it's like Primož Roglič and the sport he was in before. Someone should talk about that more.
Yeah, absolutely. Magnus Cort's enough for an entire team in his tour, isn't he? Let's be honest.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us today as Primož Roglič broke yet another heart in the run into a finish, and as such is expected to play Abenazer at the Guildford Theatre's pantomime run of Aladdin this coming December. Book early to avoid disappointment. Join us again tomorrow, where we'll be looking at the small lumpy action from Stage 12 in the next edition of The Velocast.
I'm just looking at the roadbook. It is called the Alto del 14%.
No, I was looking at that as well. You're right. Who knew?